This is for audition purposes only, not to be used for broadcasting. It's the Mary Margaret McBride program time, so please stand by for Mary Margaret herself.
This year, 1951, is a red letter year for your Red Cross. This is a year when Red Cross services for our rapidly increasing armed forces must be expanded. And for help in this great program, the Red Cross turns to you. With thousands of young men away from home in the armed forces, family problems are intensified and new ones arise. These are the situations that are eased by the Armed Forces program of the Red Cross. An ever-ready network of communication is maintained by Red Cross field directors, hospital workers, and home service workers to speed the solutions to the problems which place an unnecessary burden on our servicemen. This is a big job, and as our armed forces grow, so must the Red Cross services grow, at a cost of $38 million for this phase of Red Cross activities alone. Your help is needed now. Mobilize for defense, for your family, your community, the nation. Support your Red Cross. Now we're ready to start the Mary Margaret McBride program.
Gary Cooper, put up your guards. This is a test question. What do you really think of glamour?
Oh, that's a fast one. What do I really think of glamour? Oh.
This is a test question. I'll tell you why I ask you that, and then you can answer it if you want to or not, just as you like. I wanted to prove three things by this, or disprove three things. I read that until you were, when you were a little boy, you went to school in England, and that you never acquired an English accent, but that all the boys went around saying, "Howdy, partner." In other words, the boys got your accent. So I wanted to hear your voice to see if you had an accent. Then second, I wanted to see if, I was eager to see if you really did write a piece once about glamour, or did your press agent write it, attribute it to you. I haven't yet found that out.
Well, I don't remember that. I had never been concerned, really qualified to say anything much about glamour. I appreciate it. If what we see is called glamour in Hollywood, we see quite a lot of it. But I think it's a word that's been kicked around maybe and misused some. What are we talking about? Are you talking about glamour? Or what's,
yeah, we were just talking about my
schooling.
Test question, you know.
Yeah,
whether you had been able to go to study, well, to go to school in England and never acquire an English accent, because nearly everybody does, don't you think?
Well, at the age I was in school there, which is from 10 to 13, I acquired it very easily and unconsciously, and I didn't realize I had an English accent till I got back home in Montana, and I became a curiosity immediately, and I proceeded to try all ways I could to lose the British accent, because it was embarrassing to a Montana kid.
So you really did get it, in spite of the boys getting yours?
Apparently I did, yeah.
Did you have to fight at any time over 10-gallon hats and their conception of America?
I was chased up the alley several times by a whole gang of kids calling me dude, sissy, and Englishman.
Yeah. Oh, this is after you got back.
This is
when I
got
over there.
Oh, in England? No. They were quite curious. That time, of course, that long time ago, the average English kid thought that anyone from the United States, any part of the United States, lived among the Indians. And I was even asked quite seriously if I or my father had to kill any Indians. And, of course, I had to set them straight on that. But I knew some Indian boys that I used to sort of grew up with on the ranch in the summertime. But they were very friendly, and their motion picture conception of the Indians was not quite accurate.
Good for you. Now, you've disproved the third point that I was trying to prove or disprove. I wanted to see if you really were the Calvin Coolidge of the movies. you'd really loved, I don't know whether you'd love it or whether you'd lose your temper maybe, but in the library, in the New York Public Library, there's what's called the theatrical morgue. That means just, you know what a morgue is in a newspaper office, just a place where they keep pictures and clippings of people. There you are, page after page after page of you. with all kinds of stories about you. And it'd be very amusing, I should think, for the person about whom those stories are written to see how many of them are true and how many of them he never dreamed of.
Mm-hmm.
And one, there was a long piece on glamour. It seems you got pretty sick of the whole subject of glamour. You thought that glamour was a pretty silly thing. After all, somebody wrote.
Synthetic, I thought, I guess, at times.
What attracted you about Andrew Jackson?
Well, Andrew Jackson's story is a long story which could never be put into one film because the phases cover such a large scope of time throughout the man's life, the early part of the wars in the South, and the Battle of New Orleans, and it's the story of a great soldier in the latter phases of his life, the story of a president, the personal story, his love story. It's a terrific story in itself.
Well, is he the one that his wife was gossiped about so much?
Yes.
And,
mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. It nearly drove him crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This feeling mm-hmm. that he had for his wife.
He rose to the defense of his wife against mm-hmm. many of the people of the country at that time, and it was a very sad and sweet and wonderful story of American life, of married life.
I wonder if it ever was put into pictures.
No, it's never been done in complete form. He's been brought into the character. He's been brought into stories several times, but rather as an incidental character to stories. Yes.
You'd think they'd grab it. What is the matter, Stella Carr?
Mary Margaret, I want you to know that you heard that noise. Well, that was the plumbers fixing something. When they heard Gary Cooper was there, they said, "We'll stop if we can come down and see him."
Here they are. Right over and shake hands with Gary Cooper.
How do you do?
What's your name?
Mr. Gottlieb.
His name is Gottlieb.
Hamburg.
I know you.
What did he say?
Amalo.
Amalo. Well, thank mm-hmm. you very much. Are you going to stop hammering?
Yeah, we'll stop hammering.
All right, sit right
to
down.
Mr. Cooper.
They'll stop hammering if they can speak to Mr. Cooper.
How's the plumbing situation?
Pretty good over here. Not bad at all.
Pretty good, he says. Not bad at all.
It doesn't freeze up here, does it?
No, I guess not. No, I know.
That's what happens on this program, you see. You said that you thought it was rather nice, Gary Cooper, that we do it from home, and these are the things, the hammering overhead. I don't know whether you noticed that or not.
It makes it very homey. You got to worry about plumbing even here in New York.
Yeah. The thing that I'm worried about, do you suppose that these boys are going to lose money by having to stop hammering to listen to broadcast?
Our time goes on just the same.
Their time goes on just the same.
Radio time and plumbing time.
Right, yes. Oh, that's wonderful.
I'm glad to see you boys anyway.
I likewise, I assure you. It's a pleasure. Too bad my boys are going to see you all.
Hey, good. They better listen, tell your plumbers to stop talking, Stella, because we can't hear them on the air. We're really on the air, you know.
Yeah,
you
sorry.
Boys thought that Gary Cooper was just here. And we were I bet this has never happened on a radio program before in the history of the world. You reckon it has?
I don't know. It hasn't happened to me before.
It was the first time.
It's always the first time, says our plumber friend. Now that I've got Gary Cooper kind of gentled down, I really feel I have. You know, you're wrong about your feeling that...
No, I'm still scared of microphones.
You are, but yes. Not of me. Let's forget this thing's here, will you? The thing that you feel, apparently, and we read it in so many of the clippings, is that you can't understand why people should be interested in you. Why should they care that you went to school in England when you were a little boy, or why should they give a darn about how you got started in Hollywood? Do you realize that your whole life has been of great interest to American people? I bet you've been a hero. Just look at these men, the way they feel, and saying, "I wish I had my boy here. Oh, I wish I had my boy." Mm-hmm. That's a terrible responsibility that you've had on you, you know, in your life, and a wonderful responsibility. It's a great thing to have people look on you that way, and it won't hurt you a bit.
I know it is. I know. I just another thing of our inadequacies in Hollywood. We are expected to be perhaps a lot of things that we're not. We're supposed to be paragons of virtue and heroic and all sorts of things that very few of us could really live up to be, I think. But Well, you better go ahead.
No. I understand that perfectly.
Talk too much.
I understand that perfectly, but I think that perhaps you carry it a little too far in your own mind, because it seems to me that you're an awfully nice guy, and that it would do people good to hear about. Well, for instance, one of the things I read about you was that you now that you worked pretty hard when you were getting started, but that now you think that maybe people in this world work too hard and never take time to enjoy life, and then it's too late suddenly. That interested me. Is that the way you feel?
Well, yes, I think everyone is entitled to and should have a well-rounded-out life. A well-rounded-out life means work hard when you work and have time to play for the sake of your health, and be able to take advantage of the time to play and play well, doing things that are constructive and really recreational, whether it's hunting or playing baseball or playing golf.
Skiing? Do you ski?
Yeah, I ski a little. Mm-hmm. Not very well, but I ski and do a lot of things. Not very well in the athletic line, but they're all fun and they're a great relaxation from the work.
I think your face makes you work better when you work. And I think stay outdoors a lot.
And I think if you work, you play better when you play.
Mm-hmm.
I think all work or all play is bad for anyone.
I read somewhere, too, that you like the desert, that you like to go out on the desert. I've always thought I'd like that.
Yeah, I like the open country. I don't care where it is, the desert or the mountains or even the sea. The sea is fascinating to me.
Did you have a hard time getting started in Hollywood? You weren't in pictures when you first went out there, were you?
No, I had no idea of going into pictures. I took an extra job because I ran into a couple of friends of mine who had been out rodeoing. A couple of boys I went to school with, and they were riding broncs. Ran the rodeo circuit around the country, and I ran smack into them on the street one day, and they said, come on down to Fox. You need a little dough. They sent a call out for some boys to ride. And so I didn't have anything to lose. I wasn't making any money much at the time and selling advertising, so I went down with them and got a job, and I got $10 the first day, and the second day I got $10 riding check and plus two $15 stunt checks for taking falls off of horses.
You had more for falls.
So I had about $40 one day's work, and I thought that was pretty hot stuff. Yeah. That looked very good. That made the motion pictures very attractive to me. So I sort of stayed with it and tried to find an angle to really get into the picture business. For about a year, I didn't have much luck. Nobody seemed to think I would ever be an actor, and they certainly had no reason to think so either. And, I didn't have any reason to think so either, except that the business did appeal to me, and the fact that Tom Mix was making an awful lot of money at that time.
$17,500 a week.
One of the first pictures I worked in was a Tom Mix picture, and I watched Tom act, and I thought, well, golly, this business is, I could learn to do that, perhaps, so.
Well, you'd come from Montana, hadn't you, and you'd always ridden, and you'd always known how to pack a gun, hadn't you?
No, not exactly.
Wait a minute. Don't anybody leave with the plumbers, because I have a lot more things to ask Gary Cooper. You know, he's had a pretty exciting life, that one. Of course, it's possible that he'll not tell everything about his life, nor even nearly everything, but something we'll get out of him. And we'll be right back as soon as you've listened to a thing that I really want you to know about.
On the job, wherever disaster strikes, that's your Red Cross, ever ready, always alert. And because of its unrivaled reputation for disaster preparedness and relief, the Red Cross has now been asked by our government to mobilize its chapters in order to provide food, clothing, and temporary shelter on a mass basis in the event of enemy attack. This means training millions of people, one in every family, in home defense activities that will save lives and reduce suffering. And it means that the Red Cross needs additional funds to carry out this tremendous undertaking. The Red Cross has answered its nation's call, and now it's up to you to back up this call. Mobilize for defense for your family, your community, the nation. Remember, the disaster service and the health and safety services you support when you give to the Red Cross this year are services that will help you, your family, and your community in case of emergency. Give now. Support your Red Cross. And now, Mary Margaret, let's continue.
Yes, but first, Stella Carton, now don't stop me, because I think right here we ought to tell people a little about you. They heard your voice, but they don't know who you are, maybe. Stella Carton is my manager and my no-woman. We've been together all the 17 years I've been on the air. Someday I'll get her to tell about being press agent for a circus when she was just out of school. A feisty little kid with red hair pretending to be 5 years older than she was. Imagine that. Or maybe we'll talk about the days when we lived in a Greenwich Village apartment and cooked chaos. Chaos was a little of everything you had in the house, all mixed together. Shall I give you the recipe? Well, say that you have some tamales and some canned corn. Oh, I know, Stella. I'll go on about that another day and about you, because once again, here is something interesting to everybody.
What keeps me alive? Blood. My blood. What keeps you alive? Blood. Your blood. What keeps a badly wounded serviceman alive? Blood. Yours and mine. Yes, the blood we give through the Red Cross is the self-same blood that provides new life for lagging hearts. But there's more to the Red Cross blood program than the mere giving. As the official procurement agency for defense needs, the Red Cross, in addition to operating its system of regional blood centers, is responsible for planning, operating, and coordinating special defense and independent collection centers. Since its inception, the Red Cross blood program has supplied more than 1 million pints of blood to patients in more than 2,300 civilian hospitals and met all requests of the military for blood. During the coming year, the Red Cross will open several new blood centers to supplement its present total of 38 regional centers and 55 mobile units. We must all support the Red Cross now. And now, Mary Margaret, on with the show.
Well, anyhow, what was the winning of Barbara Worth the first success? I guess it was.
That was the first big picture I worked in. I'd done several two-reelers and had done a lot of extra work before.
And that's
that.
When Sam Goldwyn saw you and sent for you.
Mostly riding jobs, wherever there was a cavalry charge or a western to be made, I was in those, but nobody could see me dressed up very much. I didn't see myself dressed up parts either.
You wore 10-gallon hats? And
most of the time, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then they tell a cute little story about B.P. Schulberg, is that his name?
Yes.
Sending for you one day, and here's this great conference room with a lot of people sitting around, I guess one of those conference tables, and this man comes in, and all in the world he does, according to this story, is smile, and they say, all right, and he goes out, and they all say that he's the man.
Well, that's the way they signed me up in the contract. Somebody gave me a push into this big room, big conference room, and there are a lot of men sitting around at a big table, and I was very embarrassed. I didn't know what to do, and they didn't help me out much. They just sort of looked me up and down, and I didn't know whether to back out or turn around and run out. So I stood there a couple of minutes, and then I went out, and that's all there was to it. And the next day, they came around to the contract. So I signed it.
And what was that for?
That was a Paramount.
Oh, that was just to work for Paramount?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then you went on, what all did you make there?
I stayed at Paramount for 12 years. Yes, made the Virginian there.
Didn't you love the Virginian?
Yeah, I liked it. It was a wonderful story. It was my first talking picture. In fact, it was one of the first talking pictures in which they did outside scenes, where they first took sound equipment outdoors and photographed and recorded on sound the noise of cattle crossing rivers and the bellowing of calves and shouting of men and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And you had to change, you had to mix the babies up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the funniest scenes in motion picture history. It's a wonder to me they wouldn't remake that one now.
It's been remade.
Oh, has it?
Since I made it, yeah.
I never saw it again. I just remember that one, but it was wonderful. That was a good picture.
Joel McRae made it at Paramount about 4 or 5 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm.
I bet he wasn't so cute mixing them up, though, as you were. Yes, you were just perfect. You just looked like the rest.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, I think so. Now, doggone it. And I'm not I haven't got a crush on you or anything like that. I just think you're a good guy.
Well, I'm a good mixer-upper, isn't it?
Yeah, you're a good mixer-upper. There's another item. Said that you hate to see yourself on the screen without an audience, and I can imagine that you would go through a good deal. seeing yourself anyhow. Don't you think it's a terrible experience?
Yeah, I don't believe in inflicting that on myself. After a picture's made, somebody's got to see it. We just hope it's worth seeing. Hope people like them.
Yeah. Well, you've got a new one, USS Tea Kettle.
Yes, I saw that with an audience the other day. That's...
How'd they like it?
Well, the audience liked it fine.
How'd you like it?
Well, I thought it was very good.
You just wished you weren't in it, probably, if you had to see it.
Not because I was in it. There's so many other people in the cast that were all wonderful, and the story was wonderful, and the direction, everything. It's the type of picture I like to see.
Tell a little of the story of it.
Well, I can't tell you the story. It's about it's a Navy story, but it's based on an actual happening, and for that reason alone, I think it's good because it really happened. And
you mean that they actually had this patrol?
This is about an experimental engine in a small ship called a PC, which is a sort of a submarine chaser type of ship. Happened during the last World War out of the Philadelphia Navy Yard. But some of the things that happened were so very funny and uproarious that you just can't help.
Well, it was manned by what they call 90-day wonders. And that means landlubbers that have had 90 days training.
Yes, mostly a completely inexperienced crew and inexperienced officers aboard this little ship. And
including you, who were the skipper.
Including me, and I got aboard the ship, supposedly, before I knew that I was captain. And then when these fellows stood up and saluted me and called me captain, I then received the awful shock with the knowledge that I was commander of the ship and with also the knowledge that I didn't know the first darn thing about being a captain of a ship or how to handle a ship without going back into the manual and brushing up on the course. And at that same instant, the man on the dock, the port commander, says, "Get the ship out of here. We've got to make room for another vessel." So from then on, the panic starts. And it goes right on and builds up more and more.
Did the audience laugh hard?
Yes, the audience reaction was wonderful to it.
Mm-hmm. It's a good picture.
All the boys in the Navy seem to like it.
It's a 20th Century Fox picture. I was reading a book written by my guest for tomorrow. Did you ever run into Walter Carey?
No.
He wrote some histories of the Navy after the war was over. And twice in the book you're mentioned. This is a novel. Mm-hmm. These girls are in Washington. And one of them says about a man she's just met. See, meeting men for girls who work in the government in Washington is very important because there are more of them than there are men. Mm-hmm. So they have a pretty hard time. So this girl said, "He looks like Gary Cooper." And then later they referred to it again. So you're a household word.
It's an awful thing to hang on a fella. Looks like Gary Cooper.
Well, I think you've borne up... really borne up awfully well, and I appreciate it. There's only one thing that I know about your life that I've left out, the fact that you once wanted to be a cartoonist. And I had the most wonderful idea yesterday. I thought the thing for me to do with this room where we broadcast is to have guests sign the wall. And if they can draw, they can draw me a little picture on the wall. Wouldn't this be a wonderful wall by the time? Just decorate. See, we haven't hung any pictures yet. And I think the thing to do would be to decorate it that way. Wouldn't it be the most famous wall in the world in the end?
Would. You must be sure and get better artists than I am, though.
Oh, there you go. There you go. If I had a big black crayon, though, I'd get you to sign it right over there.
No, I can't draw anymore. I used to draw when I was in school. I used to draw quite well, as a matter of fact. But I've tried it several times since, and I've been away from it too long. I can't draw a line anymore.
Gary Cooper, if you had your life to live over, would you want to be something different than you are? Have you ever said to yourself, "I wish I'd done it that way"?
Well, I also wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a fine surgeon. And I also wanted to be an artist. And like a lot of young guys, I guess you get confused. You don't know what you can do, and you start doing the thing that brings you in a little dough to live on, and first thing you know, you're in it sometimes for life. But I've been very, very lucky and very fortunate in having got into the motion picture business. It makes you very grateful to circumstance and to people who can stand going in and looking at you with pictures.
Do you get much fan mail?
Oh, I guess so. Some.
I just wondered if boys ask you what they ought to be and all that.
Yes, I've been asked advice, and
You never feel that you're quite up to giving it, I bet.
Well, you can't tell a person what to do or how to go into the motion picture business, or you can't tell another person what to do.
You can't tell them where to send their scripts either. That's what they ask me.
Yeah.
Or even they send them to me. And I've always heard that motion picture people don't look at unsolicited scripts because they're afraid later they'll be sued. If anything they do sounds the least like it. So I just tell people I don't believe there's any way to send an unsolicited script to a motion picture company. Tell me how to advise people to get an agent. Agents don't want beginners. They only want people that are going to make them a lot of money because they collect 10%.
Well, I imagine a lot of good material is overlooked that way because I've read quite a few myself. A lot of them are repetitious and repetitious of things that have been done already on the screen, and the writer doesn't happen to know that. Each writer feels that he's got an original idea which has never been presented before. But when you check them back, you find that there are many duplicates in stories. In fact, stories... The great trouble with the motion picture business or with theater and with television, I think, is the lack of new material and the proper handling of new material. And you certainly can't give anyone advice. I mean, I couldn't on what to do with a story because that should go to these agents, perhaps, who have a department, who have people who do nothing but read and classify the material they read. For recommendation or for discard. And those are the... Any, if you have that trouble, I would find out what agency does make a specialty of handling story material.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've tried to find that, but I don't mean for myself, you know, but just for listeners who...
Well, it's impossible for me, for instance, to read all the stories and scripts that are sent to me, and I have to...
You just have to send them back unread.
Yes, I have to select the ones which somehow there's any way of knowing which are the ones to read.
Speaking of agents, I suppose most of them have no man around. And one of these stories, I keep thinking of things that I know about or that I don't know, but that I read about. Gary Cooper said that one time when he was making a picture, one of the men said, "You know, you ought to. You're a shy man. You ought to have a no man." So this story said that you hired that man to be your no man, but now he's a producer.
Well, I had a friend of mine who I worked with here in New York. Wanted to get out of New York and go to Hollywood, and so we agreed that he should go out as my sort of combination business manager and no man, maybe, if you call him. That, and so he went out. He was with me for several years out in Hollywood. Read a lot of story material for me and was great help.
Do you want to be a producer?
Yes, he became a producer. Yes.
Do you, though, want to be one?
Do I? No, I don't think so.
I thought you bought a picture one time.
Well, yes, I would like to be a part-time producer, I think. Mm-hmm. But being a producer straight through requires too much sitting behind a desk and stuff. I don't like that.
Mm. Well, I think you've been swell. And thank you, Gary Cooper. All the luck in the world to you. Now stay right where you are, you all.
In an emergency, any one of us can be depended upon to put forth an extra effort. If necessary, you homemakers could provide makeshift accommodations for extra people. Or you men could drive all night to fulfill a mission. But maintaining that extra pace and doing your regular daily work is another story. Well, that's the situation our Red Cross is in this year. Right now, the Red Cross has assumed its greatest responsibility ever in peacetime. It has expanded armed forces services, blood procurement programs, and civil defense plans. But it still must maintain its traditional community service. Knowing the Red Cross and its reputation for always coming through, we feel confident that this year will be no exception, but that the Red Cross does need our help. In order to continue disaster preparedness, highway first aid stations, water safety programs, and other invaluable community services, the Red Cross needs an added effort from you. This year, be extra sure to support the Red Cross. Well, this is the end of another Mary Margaret McBride program.
Be sure to be waiting for me tomorrow. Goodbye, you all.
Mary Margaret McBride returns tomorrow as Stella H. Kahn speaking. This is for audition purposes only, not to be used for broadcasting.